From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's Friday, and that means it's time for our Week in Review. A little later in the hour, we'll have a mini local news roundup out of the Quad Cities. But we start today with politics. The Illinois General Assembly was back in Springfield this week for its fall veto session as lawmakers think through the implications for Illinois of a second Trump administration. On that note, Governor J.B. Pritzker has been making news. He announced the launch of Governors Safeguarding Democracy. Here he is earlier this week talking about it on the PBS NewsHour.
The federal government plays a very important role in people's lives all across this country, and we just want them to live within the law and make sure that they're not taking away rights that we've established in our respective states.
Meanwhile, late last week, a federal judge in East St. Louis struck down Illinois' assault weapons ban as unconstitutional. And unsurprisingly, Illinois Attorney General Kwame Rowell has already filed a notice of appeal on that. Here to talk us through this is Peter Hancock, State House reporter with Capital News Illinois. Peter, happy Friday. Thanks for making the time.
Happy Friday. It's good to be here.
So Illinois politicians have had a week and a half now to process the news of Trump's victory and the very likely Republican control of the Congress. Democrats, of course, are still firmly in control here in Illinois. How would you characterize what you've been hearing from Pritzker and others about the incoming presidential administration?
Well, in short, I'd say they are very concerned about it, and they do not yet have any specific proposals about what to do about it. Clearly, former President Trump won the election. So on one level, you have to kind of respect the will of the American people. I mean, this was not a fluke of the Electoral College. He actually did win the popular vote as well as a sizable majority of the electoral vote. On the other hand, people still have fresh memories of the first Trump administration. Multiple cases you probably remember of Governor Pritzker going head to head with the Trump administration during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Get your bleep together. I remember the tweet. Yes.
Yeah. The governor was issuing executive orders trying to control the spread of the pandemic while the president was in the White House, in some cases denying the reality of the pandemic and not wearing a mask. And, you know, it seemed to be kind of undermining or it was perceived that he was undermining the efforts of states. During the first term, Illinois passed the Reproductive Health Act, which kind of enshrined the right to abortion as a fundamental right in state statute in response to Trump's appointment of conservative judges up and down the judiciary and especially at the Supreme Court. And they were anticipating the overturning of Roe versus Wade.
Yeah, signed into law by Republican Governor Rauner, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Further than that, I think in 2019. So there are fresh memories of the state having to kind of protect its ideological prerogative in the face of very hostile, countervailing sort of ideology coming out of the White House.
Just want to self-correct there. I think the Reproductive Health Act, you're right, that was under the Pritzker administration. I may be thinking of a different one that came earlier. Either way, let's talk about veto session, because one of the main stories I've seen this week is about has nothing to do with the Trump administration, actually. It's about legislation that would ban carbon sequestration injections near aquifers. We've talked on the show about how Archer Daniels Midland, ADM, had liquid carbon dioxide leaking into areas outside of its permit near Decatur. There are concerns about what that means for the Mahomet Aquifer, which is a major source of drinking water in the region. But there was some legislation. Now the Illinois Senate President, Don Harmon, put the brakes on that. What are the opposing views here?
It's kind of hard to tell. There was a hearing earlier this week. It looked like this bill was on its way to at least advancing to the floor of the Senate. And then, as you say, President Harmon kind of put the brakes on it and said, we need some more information here. So it's kind of hard to tell exactly what was going on behind the scenes there. But clearly there are two competing interests. One is the interest, a lot of people think that this is one of the one element in addressing climate change and excessive carbon in the atmosphere is to capture that carbon and basically stick it back underground from whence it came, storing it in underground injection wells like the one that ADM had opened in central Illinois. And, you know, the countervailing interest, of course, is in protecting other resource underground resources, especially drinking water. A lot of concern about what happens if this is like liquefied CO2. So, you know, under pressure, it's the gas compressed into liquid form and then injected underground. What are the environmental and health impacts if that should leak into drinking water? So I think we're looking at getting a lot more scientific information and probably a lot more economic information to find out whether or not this is feasible technology and whether or not Illinois is suited for it.
Mm. All right. Last thing I want to ask you about was your big story this week was about Illinois' assault weapons ban. Federal Judge Stephen McGlynn in East St. Louis ruled the ban unconstitutional. What were the grounds for his decision and what happens with the case and with the ban now?
Well, this was like a 168-page opinion that came out on a Friday afternoon before a holiday weekend, which, is, of course, is when reporters love to be handed large court opinions. But, you know, it falls along the lines that we've seen in recent U.S. Supreme Court decisions. He's basically saying that the right to bear arms is a fundamental constitutional right protected by the Second Amendment and protected against state action through the 14th Amendment, and that this assault weapons ban, he's basically saying that these are weapons that are used, they're in common use for legal purposes, including self-defense, and therefore are protected under the Second Amendment, and you can't just issue a blanket ban against them. This is one of several cases that are at various different stages of federal court action. Interestingly, earlier this week, a whole other case having to do with Cook County's ordinance imposing a similar ban, which is actually significantly older than the state's assault weapons ban. That was before the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, excuse me, after a federal district judge in Chicago earlier this year had upheld it. There are a lot of precedents at the Seventh Circuit upholding these kinds of bans at both the state and local level. And so the gun right groups that are behind these lawsuits are trying to get the Seventh Circuit to overturn its own precedent. And if they can't do that, then obviously, you know, everybody is looking for these cases to eventually wind up before the U.S. Supreme Court to decide, you know, to tell us how far states and local governments can go in controlling these weapons.
Or possibly more likely can't go because they do have a pretty expansive view of the Second Amendment at the Supreme Court these days. All right, Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
No problem. Thank you.
This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we continue with politics, but move now to Washington, where the presidential transition is underway.
President-elect Donald Trump announcing more members of his second administration today, none raising more eyebrows than Fox News host Pete Hegseth as the next Secretary of Defense.
He does not seem to have any specific experience on defense policy or DOD policy, and that's concerning.
Donald Trump's appointment today of vaccine skeptic Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as the nation's next health secretary is being met with cheers and fears.
Blindsided That's how many Senate Republicans feel by Donald Trump's choice of Matt Gaetz to be attorney general. Sources telling CNN there were audible gasps on the Hill as the announcement was popping up on people's phones. They were hearing from reporters.
All right. So that is beyond that, I should say. Trump met with House Republicans this week, where he reportedly made comments about potentially seeking a third term, which is prohibited by the Constitution, of course. People in the room say it was a joke, but yeah, I think it's worth noting because it is the kind of comment or joke that none of his predecessors in office have or would make, save for FDR, of course. Joining us now to talk about this and more is Linda Kenyon, Illinois Public Media's Washington correspondent. Hello again, Linda.
Hello again. Yes, another busy week in Washington.
It's only going to get busier, I suspect. So we heard one of the reporters in that montage talking about President-elect Trump's picks raising eyebrows. Let's set RFK Jr. aside for the moment, but we've got Pete Hegseth, who's a Fox News weekend host, as defense secretary. Tulsi Gabbard, a former Democrat whose lies repeating Russian propaganda. Mitt Romney, himself called treasonous, as the director of national intelligence. Former Congressman Matt Gaetz, who's being investigated, or has been investigated, I should say, on allegations that he had sexual relations with a 17-year-old. He would be attorney general. What do we know about why Trump is choosing these sorts of people for his cabinet?
Well, there's a lot of schools of thought about that. One is just to kind of overwhelm us. Another is...
Flood the zone, as Steve Bannon once said. Yes.
Yes, definitely some flooding of the zone, which is a practice that we became accustomed to in the first Trump administration. The other is that he is very, very clear that he rewards loyalists. And all of these people that he has named so far as his choices, which still need to be vetted and approved by the Senate in the confirmation process, although there are ways around that, but that's an aside. All of these folks have been very loyal to the president, the former president, and so this, in that respect, should come as no surprise.
So let's focus on Matt Gaetz again. He was investigated by the U.S. Department of Justice. That did not come to anything. Now he would be heading the Department of Justice. And I should say, just hours after he was nominated, he resigned from his U.S. House seat, which seems to have short-circuited a House ethics investigation, which was getting ready to vote on whether to release a report on him. Now that he's resigned, that case is considered moot. Will we see this report at all?
Well, first of all, I want to caution against the word nominate, because technically he can't nominate anybody until he's actually president. But these will
Thank
be
you.
His
announced.
Eventual
yes, yes, yes. Thank you.
Yes. So these are his picks. Will we ever see the light of day without a House Ethics Committee report? Well, it was supposed to be released today, and the Ethics Committee canceled its meeting. Now, that really upset a lot of people on Capitol Hill, not the least of which were the senators who are demanding that they see this report before they can carry out their role, their constitutional role of advice and consent. So chief among them, of course, is Illinois Democratic Senator Richard Durbin, who heads the Senate Judiciary Committee. And it would be his committee that would be responsible for holding the confirmation hearings and then sending its recommendation to the full Senate for a floor vote. And he released a letter saying, you know, look, the sequence and timing of Mr. Gaetz's resignation from the House raises serious questions about the contents of the House Ethics Committee report and findings. And he says, we cannot allow this critical information from a bipartisan investigation into longstanding public allegations be hidden from the American people. And so his letter went on to say that this report needs, at the very least, to be released to the Senate, that it has a constitutional duty to provide advice and consent on presidential nominees, and it must review all of the information necessary to fulfill that duty. The House Ethics Committee says, we have no jurisdiction over a former member of Congress. So that makes this entire conversation moot. Well, those who are supposed to be, doing the advice and consent are saying it's not moot. It's crucial, and we need to see that report. And we have among them, by the way, Senator John Cornyn, who is the a member of the Republican Senate Judiciary, a Senate Judiciary Committee member, and he is saying there should not be any limitation on the Senate Judiciary Committee's investigation, including whatever the House Ethics Committee has generated.
Well, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. We need to take a break in a minute. We were going to wrap up here, but there's still a few more things. Can you stick around after the break, Linda?
Sure.
Great. All right. So let me just tee it up, because one of the next things I do want us to talk about is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has spread disproven ideas about vaccines. He said he wants to pause government research on infectious diseases. He would now be heading the Department of Health and Human Services, which oversees the Food and Drug Administration and the Centers for Disease Control and the National Institutes of Health. We're going to talk about how that one is going down in Washington as well when we continue with Linda Kenyon after a short break. Let me take a moment to remind listeners, if you want to get in touch with us, suggesting stories or guests, you can do so by emailing talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org. Another reminder, you can also find our show on YouTube these days. You can do that by searching for Illinois Public Media. We are going to continue our political roundtable, move on to local politics, and the rest of the show after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are continuing our week in review with Linda Kenyon, Illinois Public Media's Washington correspondent. Before the break, we were talking about some of the people that President Trump has announced his intention to nominate for top government positions in the future Trump administration. And let's focus in on Robert F. Kennedy Jr. As I mentioned before the break, he has spread disproven ideas about vaccines. He does also want to take on sort of what he calls moneyed interests in the pharmaceutical industry, food additives, food dyes. One of the things that struck me most about what he has said is pausing government research on infectious diseases, I guess in favor of chronic diseases. But he was recently quoted as saying, "I'm going to say to NIH scientists, God bless you all. Thank you for public service. We're going to give infectious disease a break for about 8 years," end quote. Linda, how is RFK Jr. going down?
He's not going down very well right at the moment. I haven't heard anybody offer a full-throated endorsement of him as the head of Health and Human Services, and have raised a lot of questions about his vaccine skepticism and the dissemination of disinformation. There was a very powerful letter that was released this morning from the head of the Center for Science and the Public Interest. The president, Dr. Peter G. Lorre, among other things, says that, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has absolutely no medical experience, and to lead a department like that would be unusual. And he also said, and I'm going to quote, "He is not remotely qualified for the role, should be nowhere near the science-based agendas that safeguard our nutrition, food safety, or health." And it says, again, this is a quote, "Nominating an anti-vaxxer like Kennedy to HHS is like putting a flat earther at the head of NASA." Another excerpt from this letter goes on to say, "If unassuming little viruses could talk, measles, mumps, and rubella would be loudly cheerleading for the nomination of this prolific spreader of scientific misinformation." So, not very popular right now.
Time will tell if the Senate does its advise and consent function on some of these nominees. One other thing that happened this week you took note of is President-elect Trump and President Biden meeting at the White House, something that I think did not happen 4 years ago during the transition. What are your takeaways from that?
Well, the former president meeting with the incoming president is a tradition at the White House that was broken when then-President Donald Trump lost his election to the then-President-elect Joe Biden. As you know, President then-Trump refused to acknowledge that he lost the election, and he refused to go through any of the normal symbols of the peaceful transfer of power, including inviting the incoming president to the White House. However, Joe Biden and the entire administration have said, look, the election did not go the way that we wanted. We are very disappointed. But in the democracy, there are things that we must do on behalf of the American people. And that includes this sit down in the Oval Office, a symbol of the transfer of power. And that includes also attending the inauguration of the person who will succeed you in office. And Joe Biden has said he is doing both of those. And so President-elect Donald Trump came to the White House. They had a meet and greet before the reporters. It was very gracious. And then they had a closed-door meeting that lasted about 2 hours, which is very long in White House terms. And then the president-elect exited the White House and did not speak to the media, which really surprised us because he's often sought out, his opportunities to speak to the media and to express his opinions on many, many things. And he did not do that this time. So, it was a very, very blatant symbol of the peaceful transfer of power that outgoing President Biden has pledged to carry out. And it was unusually gracious on the part of former president, now president-elect, Donald Trump.
Huh. A roaring fire in the background of some of those images, which I gather some have seen as a metaphor. Linda Kenyon, Washington correspondent for Illinois Public Media, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.